change around my team. Yeah, we off the leash. You could look us in the eyes, see we have peace. Black and gold, that's the colors when we go to war. When we step up on that field, you gon' hear my roar. We them tiger cats, we them tiger cats. We them tiger cats, we them tiger cats.
Yeah, nobody hitting harder, better keep your guard up. Cause with everything we draw, we can score it when we wanna.
Welcome to PodsQB. I'm Josh Smith.
I'm Mike Graham.
Mike, I am going to begin this week's podcast like I began my piece on Three Down Nation, and I'll say same as it ever was. Do you remember the the Talking Heads song "Once in a Lifetime"? I'm sure it's not something you super remember, but "same as it ever was" is a line from the song. And when I was watching this most recent Ticats game in Calgary, that's the thing that popped into my head when the game was over. Is that, of course, the Ticats would go into Calgary, play a fairly decent game, and come out on the losing end by a single digit. I don't know about you, Mike, but first, the Ticats lost 19-18 in Calgary to the Stampeders. When the score was 18-12, Mike, I literally said to my father, you know what? The Cats are going to lose this 19-18. And lo and behold, they did. Were you surprised? I wasn't.
No, I wasn't surprised. It's been a running theme, it seems, for games in Calgary to come down to the last play, and it just doesn't work out for the Ticats. But a lot of close games have been played over the last, however long the streak has been, I believe since 2004, there's been a lot of close games played between Hamilton and Calgary in Calgary, and we just can't seem to get over that hump. We had it in our grasp this game, and there was three or four mistakes that I believe made the difference.
Yeah, three or four mistakes, three or four missed opportunities. We'll talk about that in a bit. I got the numbers here, Mike. Again, for Three Down, I did it. I looked back. Some of these I remembered very vividly. Some of them a little bit hazier. But I went back to 2009. As I'm fond of saying, that's, to me, the 09 season is sort of the rebirth of Tiger Cat football. That's when they got away from all those, 3-15 seasons and started to become a consistent 500 team and a playoff squad. So I went back to that time, and in 09, they lost 15-14. And the thing that I remember from that is they're driving to win the game, and Quinton Porter, who's the quarterback at the time, takes a sack and knocks him out of field goal range, and they end up losing the game. In 2012, this one is very memorable. I'm sure you remember this one as well. They lose 34-32, and this was when they're kicking the field goal to win the game on the last play, and Andy Fantuz bobbles the hold on the field goal, and Luke Akanji can't kick it, so they lose by two. In 2013, they lost 26-22. In 2014, which was, I believe, Jeremiah Mazzoli's first ever start in the Canadian Football League, they lose 10-7. In 2015, they lose 24-23. I remember that because Zach Caleros threw a pick six to Keon Raymond, and that was pretty much the difference in that game. And then in 2016, they lost 30-24. So it just seems like losing by a single digit is the thing that the Ticats do in Calgary. So as much as there's been like kind of a vexing on this team at McMahon, you look at these losses and go, man, one or two plays, and these things, all these losses are wins. You know what I mean? Like, how crazy is that?
Yeah, I mean, we were in basically every one of those games except for there was obviously the 60-1 drubbing.
But yeah, I obviously left that one out because that was, that was a butt kicking.
Yeah, let's not talk about that.
But even last year, do you remember last year's game to open the season? They lost by two touchdowns, but they were driving for the go-ahead score. Late in the game, Mazzoli throws a pick. I'm pretty sure if not in the red zone, then very close to the red zone. And then Calgary ends up scoring a big touchdown like to salt the game away. But that was a one-score game going into like the final 3 minutes of that one. So even in games where they've lost by larger margins, they were also in those games, the 60-1 game obviously being the outlier to all of this.
Right. It's so maddening watching these games that I think that the Ticats, outplay the Stampeders. And then it just comes down to the last minute and it just doesn't go our way. But it's so frustrating to not be able to beat this team in Calgary. Yes, we're a 9-3 football team, and that is outstanding. But I really, really wanted this win. Just the, clean sweep of the Stampeders would have made me a very happy, happy boy.
Well, the way I look at it, Mike, is I say, wouldn't the best way to break the streak at McMahon be in late November in the Grey Cup? It doesn't have to be against Calgary, but just they can't win it. Like, if the Ticats get to the Grey Cup, that will be the whole, especially if they get to the Grey Cup against the Stampeders, that will be the whole narrative the entire week. They haven't won in Calgary, they haven't won in Calgary. How great would it be to beat the Stamps in McMahon in the Grey Cup and that's the streak breaker. I'll take that. I'll take all these losses the last 15 years if that's the way it ends.
Absolutely. If we win the big one in Calgary against Calgary, like, I don't want to see Calgary in the Grey Cup, but I wouldn't mind it if it was against the Tiger Cats, because obviously we would both be invested in the Grey Cup game no matter who they're playing. But how sweet would it be to beat them in their own stadium in the championship game? It would make up for all the losses for sure.
Well, and you brought up the 9-3 record a little bit ago, and that's sort of the, you look at these other losses, 09, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16. You think of those Ticat teams, for the most part, they were teams hovering around 500, fighting for their playoff lives, and these types of wins could have really helped them in their pursuit of maybe getting a higher seed, or you know what I mean? Whereas this year's team, yeah, this loss stings because it feels like the one that got away. Like this felt like, especially in the first half, the Ticats were the far superior squad in the first half. I think it was 17-6 at halftime. And then right off the opening kickoff of the second half, they made it 18-6. The Ticats were, and I think you could even ask Stampeders fans this and they would agree, the Ticats were the better team by far in that first half. Dane Evans was chucking it all over the yard. He was hit, like the touchdown to Brandon Banks, which we'll talk about in a bit, was phenomenal. Like, Hamilton was the better team, and I think they were the better team for the majority of this game, but especially in the first half. But they are 9-3. So this loss, it's not inside the division. The other teams in the division this week that played also lost. Ottawa suffered a defeat, as did Montreal. So this doesn't hurt the Ticats in the way it has in the past. And I think that that's why this loss, we sound a little more upbeat. We're talking about, oh man, can't, like a couple of years ago. I mean, okay, maybe more than a couple of years ago, because a couple of years ago was a 61 loss. But let's say 2015. We're probably not as happy after a 24-23 defeat as we kind of are today. We're still talking about going to the Grey Cup, and we're still talking about a team that's 6 games above 500, that's 6 points up on second place, that will more than likely clinch a playoff spot this weekend. So yeah, this is one of those ones. I'm with you, man. Man, you sweep the Stamps. You finally beat Bo. You finally win in Calgary. Man, that would have been nice to put on the resume for the 2019 season. But I still can't get totally down on this loss because I sometimes think, and you can agree with me or disagree with me. I'm curious to get your take on it, that sometimes losses like this can kind of recalibrate a team. You know what I mean? Like, you think of like they all these mistakes that they had made, the turnovers and the lack of execution and stuff like that hadn't hurt them the last month of the year. You know what I mean? Like, they won their last 4 games, some of them convincingly, some of them not. But they made these same mistakes in those games as well. There were turnovers. Dane Evans has more interceptions than he has touchdowns on the year. So he clearly has had a problem protecting the football. But there was no consequences to those mistakes in the last 4 games before this one because they found ways to win. Now you lose a game like this, maybe this kind of refocuses them a little bit and helps them catapult through the final third of the season, and maybe they get 4 or 5 wins these last few weeks. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it made they put the emphasis on their weaknesses a little bit more, maybe take a closer look. Hey, we lost this game. Let's reevaluate what we're doing, and so forth, and improve. I can agree with that. It's tough losing to them. It just hurts. But I think that we so could have won this game. We're talking about Bo Levi Mitchell's performance in the first half alone. There easily could have been 4 interceptions on him. The fourth one was, a tip ball. They couldn't get to it. But the other three were in the hands of defenders, and could have made a huge difference if they would have picked those off.
Yeah, who was it? It was, I think the first one was Dylan Wynn. And, like, defensive lineman, hand like granite. You know, we love Dylan Wynn, but he there's a reason outside of size that he's not a receiver. Also, the funny thing about that one is I kept showing the replays, and it was very clearly that he was held. Like, you're watching as he's trying to catch that pass. The Stamps guy's, like, ripping at his jersey. It's like, all right, that's a pretty clear-cut shot of, oh, yeah, holding could be called on every play. You have the Richard Leonard one, which he dove and caught. That would have been a tough interception to make, but still one of those ones that was at the goal line, so that would have taken points off the board for the Stamps if he would have picked. Even if they would have, you know, maybe picked up a couple first downs and punted, you're taking 3 points off the board because that's what the Stamps got ended up getting on that drive. One hit Justin Tuggle right in the hands, which is that's probably the worst of the four missed ones in my opinion, because that's one of those ones where it's like, man, it's just like he disguised where he was going to be on that play beautifully, and Bo just didn't see him. And man, it like he might have taken it to the house, he might have not. But again, even if that leads to a field goal for the Ticats, there's the margin of difference there. You know what I mean? The one that bounced up and like tipped and like went in the air, those ones just suck because of how high, and I think they mentioned this on the broadcast, how long it was up there. Usually someone comes down with one of those and it's like no one did. And it's like you look at those things, those are the types of missed opportunities that can literally in this game made the difference between winning and losing.
Bo's a lucky son of a gun sometimes, isn't he?
He can be. And, like, you look at Bo's numbers, and at the end of the day, you go, okay, 342 yards, a touchdown, 96 on the quarterback efficiency rating. That's pretty good. 60% completion percentage isn't terrible, but, you know, 24 of 40, like, it's not like he lit the world on fire. You had a couple interceptions to that. That's a pretty bad football game. You know what I mean? Like, you look at Dane Evans in comparison, and I guess we might as well talk about Evans now. He had 360 through the air. He had the one touchdown. He completed almost 80% of his passes, going 34 for 43. And he had the one interception, and he has the one fumble. It's Bo doesn't have the turnovers. Evans does. There's the difference in the game. There's a difference between how you deal with both quarterbacks.
Yeah, and I think that Dane Evans is improving game in and game out, but he's still making some of those rookie mistakes. Like the interception near the end zone to Banks, and threw into double coverage. I appreciate him trying to, you know, sling in the ball, but I believe he had Mike Jones underneath wide open. He could have got a first down out of that. There was the fumble, which happens. You know, you get hit. Sometimes the ball's going to come loose. And then there was the second last possession of the Ticats had the ball in the fourth quarter. And they were in field goal range. It would have been a fairly long field goal, but he takes the sack around the 55-yard line, takes them out of field goal range, and they have to punt the ball. They ended up getting the ball back, but that's a mistake that you can't have. You can't be taking a sack when you're in field goal range.
Same as it ever was. That reminds me of the Quentin Porter sack from 09, yeah. You know what I mean? Like, and the thing with Dane Evans, and this is a question that I've been asked, and I'm going to ask you this, Mike. Do you think he's done enough to be the Ticats starting quarterback next year? Now, hear me out on this. I'm skeptical on this, and I don't entirely think that – I still think that the team holds Jeremiah Mazzoli in high regard. But you look, Mazzoli's going to be coming off an injury. He's going to be getting – he's going to be a free agent, so he's going to be getting paid probably somewhere in the $500,000 a year range, where with Evans, you have him under contract for the next 2 years at a very team-friendly number because he signed basically saying, I'm going to be a backup and I'm going to develop behind the starter. So he's – if he's making over $200,000, I would be shocked. He's not coming off an injury, and they're 4-2 with him as the starter. I think a couple weeks ago, someone asked me this, and I kind of poo-pooed it. I'm thinking now that this might be a legitimate question, that if the Ticats can go with Evans as their starter and they let Mazzoli walk in free agency and more than likely sign in Ottawa would be my guess. Yeah, we're going to hear about, oh, man, he's going to come back and bite us in the butt, but that $300,000 to $350,000 savings they would have, if not more so, on the cap. Think of the players they could bring in for that. To me, it's a very interesting question that I think is something that we'll be talking about come the offseason. But it was asked of me the last few weeks and asked of me again after this one. So I'm curious what you think about that.
Well, I definitely think it's something the team needs to contemplate. I think it all matters. It all matters if, you know, how far he goes in the playoffs. If he wins a Grey Cup for the Hamilton Tiger Cats as the quarterback, I think there's a pretty good chance that he will be the starting quarterback next year. Like for the reasons you mentioned as well, the money thing, and he won us a championship. Something that a Tiger Cat quarterback hasn't done since 1999. So, it's going to be interesting to see how he does down the stretch into the playoffs, because it's going to determine his future. He's already shown, I think teams are already licking their lips a little bit, maybe at Dane Evans, being their starter in years to come. But if he wins a championship, I think the Ticats are going to have to hold on to him.
It's definitely, I don't know, man, like, it's going to take me a while to come around on this, I think, fully. But you're right. If they win the Grey Cup, I think it's very difficult. Like, I mean, I know Nick Foles did it in the NFL with the Philadelphia Eagles. They won the Super Bowl, and he went back to being a backup the next year. I don't know. If you can save that amount of money on the cap, and that will allow you to re-sign a Jagaret Davis, re-sign a Luke Tasker, give, you know what I mean? Like, Braylon Addison's probably going to be in line for a new contract. Like, you're going to be able to pay some guys, and maybe you go out and you look for a stud running back or another receiver or you know what I mean, like another linebacker or you could really improve the team. And like, I hate saying this because as everyone who listens knows, and as you obviously know too, and you're in the same boat with me, we're huge Jeremiah Mazzoli fans. I wanted to see Jeremiah Mazzoli lead this team to a championship, and I truly do believe if he stays healthy, the Ticats are well on their way. I think they're no worse than the record they have right now. And in fact, maybe they don't lose to Saskatchewan. Maybe they win this. You know what I mean? Like, this team's no worse than 9-3 with Jeremiah Mazzoli at the helm anyway. But it is definitely something that I think the Ticats are going to have to look at. And it's something that I think fans maybe will have to, as much as they may love Jeremiah Mazzoli, it's something fans may have to get used to, is the idea of Dane Evans being the quarterback of the future and not number eight.
Yeah, I think, if Dane Evans wins the Grey Cup, I think that the fans will be totally behind him. There's a lot of criticizers of Jeremiah Mazzoli out there. And I want him to be the starting quarterback of this team, but, free agent next year, he's probably going to want a hefty pay raise, around, Bo and Mike are making $800,000. I could see Jeremiah wanting $600,000, $650,000, something like that. And if you can get Dane Evans back and he can run this offense efficiently and we can win games with him and you're only paying him, I'm just guessing here, $175,000, $150,000, whatever it is, you're right. You could spread the wealth around and we could have one hell of a team.
I mean, they already have one hell of a team. They're 9-3. Like, I only say that because we had this debate on the show a couple weeks ago, 2015 versus 2019. And obviously Evans is a better quarterback than Jeff Matthews was. And I think the other thing this tells me is that this team is deeper. The amount of injuries this team has dealt with this year is, like, we're on what? Our fourth, fifth starting running back? Like, they signed Terrell Sutton. We're going to talk about that in a bit. But, like, Luke Tasker's been missing the last few weeks. Delvin Bro's been out for over a month. We lost Ted Laurent for a couple of games. Obviously, the starting quarterback's been down. Sean Thomas Erlington's been out since week four. Like, this team has dealt with so many injuries. Simone Lawrence, they dealt with the loss of him for 2 weeks due to suspension.
Yep.
And they just keep winning football games. Yes, they lost this one, and we're not talking about a win here, but this team's not using this as an excuse. They're living that next man up mentality in a way that maybe outside of Calgary, we've never seen another team do. Like, the Stamps seem to always be able to cycle through players, and they're competitive. They don't win every game. The Stamps never got undefeated, but they're always, 13, 12, 13, 14 wins. The Ticats look like they kind of built that type of team here, doesn't it? Like, you lose the starting quarterback, the guy who was maybe the favorite to be MOP this year, and yeah, the numbers have been a bit down, and yeah, Evans has made his mistakes. They're 9-3. They're 4-2 with Evans. Is like, you can't really say, like, yeah, you can be negative and critical, as we are, because there's things that can be better. But, I mean, they say, look at the wins. All that matters is wins, and the Ticats keep winning. So, I mean, if they can win with Evans, and now you get to add all that extra money, and you can add some more guys, this team's pretty freaking good.
Yeah, it's going to be – there's going to be some tough decisions in the offseason depending on how far the Ticats go. But it's funny to me that Mazzoli got so much heat for throwing interceptions, and you know, as you mentioned earlier, Dane Evans has more interceptions than he does touchdowns, and I don't hear that at all from the fan base.
No, people give him the built-in, oh, well, he's just starting out. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But and Jeremiah Mazzoli, when he just started out, made all these mistakes too, and they were pointed out, and then he got rid of them, and then he brought, like, these guys are gunslingers, and Brett Favre is my, you know, biggest example of this. Brett Favre has the most interceptions in NFL history for a quarterback. So, but he's not, still not, he won a Super Bowl. He is in the Hall of Fame. Like, you can be, you can throw in Danny McManus. Let's use the CFL example. Danny McManus threw a ton of interceptions, of interceptions. Still one of the most beloved. I mean, he won a Grey Cup, so that's the reason why, but you can throw interceptions and people will let it go. I don't, like, these guys are gunslingers. They want to make the play. The pick that Evans threw in this one, he was feeling it. He had completed like 13 in a row, I think, at some point in that game. He was just going. And then he slinged one and he got caught. You know what I mean? Like, I mean, you're throwing deep to Brandon Banks. It's never a bad idea. But Trey Roberson, who was awesome in this game, shout out to him. They, you know, he baited him into that interception, and that's what good DBs do. But yeah, I do find it a little curious that people are more willing to forgive Evans for all his turnovers when they weren't willing to do the same with Jeremiah.
Yeah, it is interesting. Now, I just want to talk about the play calling a little bit, and I love all this creativity, the end arounds, the you know, all the trick plays, you know, with not having an actual starting running back in the lineup. They've been handing off the ball to guys like Coombs, Addison Banks, Jackson Bennett. But do you think they got a little too creative with that Banks play that looked like he was going to throw it?
Yep.
Yeah. I think they went to the well a couple too many times on that. Yeah, maybe Banks can throw the ball, but it just, I don't know, man. I don't like him in that position.
It felt like they got a little too cute in that. Like, everything was working. They were. I think that started pretty deep. That drive that they were on started fairly deep in their own end, and they were around midfield, I think, when that ball was fumbled. They might have even been over midfield, if I'm not mistaken. And I'm sure it's not that. But they were around midfield is basically the point I'm trying to make here. And it felt like that they tried to catch him off guard, maybe a big play. You know what I mean? Like, but it just felt like in that situation, maybe that wasn't the most prudent move. I've loved the way Tommy Condell has gone about designing this offense since Jeremiah Mazzoli went down. I thought that the offense was starting to click in the game that Mazzoli went down. They scored two touchdowns really quickly. And I felt like this was finally the turning point. And since then they've had to alter the way they do things, mostly because of injuries. And I've really enjoyed it, but that one, yeah, that felt like, okay, you're kind of going to the well one too many times.
Yeah, but a play I did like that was very interesting was the direct snap to Braylon Addison, who had an option, a pitch option to Brandon Banks. I just love that play. You know, I just beautiful to watch. You know, it looks like Dane Evans is going to get the ball, goes to Addison, and then he has the option to pitch it. He gets the first down. You're right. I have loved what Tommy Condell has done with this offense, you know, not having that typical, you know, trustworthy starting running back in the backfield.
I know a lot of people have been giving credit to Paul LaPolice, and rightly so, for the work he's done in Winnipeg with Matt Nichols out and without Andrew Harris for the last couple of weeks. But I don't know. Maybe we're closer to it because of our Ticat fandom, but I think more people need to talk about the job that Tommy Condell has done the last few weeks with installing these new wrinkles to the Ticats offense. And yeah, sometimes they work, sometimes they don't, but I like the fact that they're trying different things to get people in space and to get people the ball. Like you mentioned, the direct snap to Addison with the pitch option to Brandon Banks, like that's like some old school stuff in a lot of ways, but at the same time you don't see it now, and it's using your skill position players to maximize their efficiency. If we know Addison can carry the football and run the football and throw the football, and we know Brandon Banks is one of the most dangerous players with the ball in his hand. So it's one of those things where you kind of throw that at the defense, they got to pick their poison. It's genius by Condell. It's masterful game planning and masterful play execution by the players. And I don't know. Yes, there were some mistakes made. The one call there, I think, was a mistake, but I mean, more often than not, they've been dead on with these things. So I say keep it going.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. I love the creativity from Condell, and it makes me wonder why this guy was, you know, he had the OC job in Hamilton, and then he was like receivers coach, and you know, underneath the OC position for a couple of years. And I just don't understand that. This guy obviously has a wealth of knowledge for the offensive side of the ball, and he should have been an OC the whole time, I think.
Well, I'm glad that whoever else out there didn't see in Condell what Orlando Steinhauer did, and I'm glad he's back in the fold on Hamilton. Speaking, though, Mike, of the Killer Bees, Dwayne Ford called them that on the broadcast, but I would like it to be known that I gave him that nickname before. So what I'm thinking is, Dwayne Ford listens to the show, baby.
That's the only possibility.
It's the only.
I mean, who
nothing
doesn't
else makes
listen
sense.
To the show? Who doesn't listen to the show, though? I mean, come on. Everyone in the CFL listens to our show.
I won't go that far. Our numbers aren't that good, but come on. Anyway, he said on the broadcast, I got a kick. I didn't hear it because you sent me the text and was like, Dwayne Ford called him the Killer Bees. I was like, yeah. Oh, I missed it. Damn it. Anyway, speaking of the Killer Bees, Braylon Addison, Brandon Banks, I don't know what else you can say about these guys. We talk about these guys every week. They combined for 16 catches, 119 yards and a touchdown, or 219 yards, I'm sorry, and a touchdown. Addison has 8 for 114. Banks has 8 for 105 and an absolutely gorgeous 30-yard catch and run touchdown. The play design on that was absolutely brilliant. The execution on that touchdown was absolutely brilliant. We're running out of things. We have to talk about these guys every week because every week they ball out, but we're running out of things to say about them, are we not?
Yeah, they're just tremendous players. I mean, the blocking downfield was great for Brandon Banks, but he also made it, you know, if that's not Brandon Banks, I don't think he makes it to the end zone. If it's a slower player or a less dynamic player, I don't think they make it to the end zone. Braylon Addison just doing his thing week after week. He's catching the ball. He's running the ball. I can't say enough about those two players. They are just a dynamic combination.
And they're doing this all without Luke Tasker in the lineup. So imagine how dangerous these guys are going to be when he finally gets back in there.
Banks, Addison, Acklin, Tasker, Jones. I think that's how the starting five will be once Tasker comes back. And that's I'll put that lineup against anyone in the league. I know that they're, you know, maybe numbers-wise or, you know, whatever. People have their biases, but as do I. And I think these guys are the best squad in the league.
I 100% agree with you on that. Let's talk about some defensive stuff. We talked about the near picks. We talked about how they kept Bo at bay already. The one thing, though, that we didn't see in this game was anyone get a sack. Oh, man. Like, this defensive line has been so good. I think, do we chalk it up to maybe they just were having an off week, or do we have to kind of give some kudos to Calgary's offensive line here for keeping them at bay?
I think we got to give credit to Calgary's offensive line. That's been one of their strengths for many years now. I thought it might have fell off. It did fall off a little bit, I thought, earlier in the season. But it looks like now they're getting back to their old ways, and Bo's having a lot of time back there to throw.
Yeah, it was I think it was a good – like, look, they allowed 19 points, which is about what they allow per game. They allow one touchdown. They played a real bend but don't break defense in this one, making Calgary settle for a ton of field goals. It's when you hold a team to under 20 points, it's really hard to criticize the defense too much. You allow one touchdown and less than 20 points. I mean, what more can you really ask for out of your defensive unit?
Yeah, against a team like Calgary.
In Calgary. I mean, I guess what we could Calgary. Ask for is four interceptions that they should add.
Yeah, or even one of those would have been – you know, maybe would have made a difference, but it's disappointing. But I thought the defense had a really good game, you know, with the minus the sacks, but it just shows that the coverage unit were doing their job, because Bo was having a hard time, you know, finding people, especially in that first half. He stepped it up a bit in the second half, but I thought that the secondary played a pretty darn good game.
So something we haven't talked about here recently, because we haven't had a need to, so we're going to put a little spotlight on it now. Mike, you wanted to talk about penalties. That's something that you and I used to talk about on an almost weekly basis. I can't think of the last time you and I said anything about penalties. That tells me this is a pretty disciplined football team, no?
Yeah, I'd have to agree, especially in this one. only three penalties for 35 yards.
That's crazy.
If you have under five penalties in a CFL game, you are mastering your craft, because there's just so many flags in the CFL, it seems. Two on offense and one on special teams. So a great job by them being disciplined, not taking stupid penalties.
Yeah, it's like you have an illegal block, you have a holding. Like, I honestly couldn't tell you the last time a team had that few. And even Calgary in this one didn't have very many penalties. So it wasn't like, maybe that's why the game went by so quickly. Like, I remember watching this, and I was watching it with my dad, and it was like quarter. I think the game in Hamilton started at 4 o'clock, and it was like quarter after five, and they were already at like it was, that's when Calgary had kicked the field goal to make it 14-6. And it's like, okay, they're going to go into the half at 14-6. Not bad. I'll take that. And then Ticats marched down the field and kicked a field goal to make it 17-6. And it's like, and still they were in. The halftime started before the game kicked off here at like 4:08, 4:09, maybe even 4:10. And they were in the locker room before 5:20. And it's like, oh my God. And you look at the time of the game, 2 hours and 37 minutes. Like, the lack of penalties in this had a lot to do with that, I think. Like, it was a very crisp game. There was, how many challenges were there? One, maybe? Did Dickinson challenge something in there? You know what? There might not even have been a challenge if I...
I can't recall.
I can't recall either. Anyway, it's not important. But yeah, the lack of penalties makes for a crisper game. Who'd have thought? Much, much easier watch when the game flows this well.
Yeah, I left for work at about 5:30 and the game was over before I got to work. So less than 3 hour game, which is, you know, a good thing. The shorter, the better, as far as I'm concerned. The quicker you can, you know, the flow is a very important thing in the CFL, and it's kind of been taken away a little bit in the last, you know, 5 to 10 years with all these penalties that seem to happen more often in this league than any other league. So yeah, it's nice to see a game that flows like that one.
All right. The last thing from this game we have to talk about, Mike, is unfortunately a negative before we get to our Podsky Player of the Week. It's Liram Hirelahu, who we have spent the majority of this season lauding for what I thought, and I believe you agree with me on this, he's had a real bounce back season. But in this one, he has two missed field goals, one miss, one a block. I think we talked about it earlier, but we got to touch on it again. The block by Trey Roberson on that was in freaking sane. They blocked the field goal and that sucks and you're pissed off. But when you watch the replay in the aftermath of that, you just go, you kind of just got to applaud and be like, that's a baller making a baller play, man. But he misses he misses the field goal. He shanks a punt out of bounds, which is something he hasn't done with frequency, so he still gets to keep his name, unlike last year when we refused to give him his name until he stopped doing that. It's unfortunate that you have to look at these miscues and wonder if this is what cost the Ticats the game, but in a one-point loss, it's these types of things kind of loom large.
Yep, and I think that the opportunity for him to kick field goals is what hurt them as well. You know, they were in field goal range a couple times, and they took themselves out, or they threw an interception, or they fumbled. So, not Liram's best game. He also punted the ball out of bounds, which didn't cost us, but could have cost us dearly near the end of the game. I think he'll bounce back efficiently, though. This guy's been having a great season, and I think he will continue.
Yeah, that's the thing, too, is like, unlike last year where these things would happen, and it was like, oh, man, again, I don't feel as if this will hamper him in any way. Like, I have no... less faith in him if it comes down to a game-winning field goal against Edmonton this week or Winnipeg the week after or whomever the rest of the season. I will have just as much confidence that he'll make it as I did before what happened on Saturday in Calgary. So I think that's the big difference between our feelings, or I'll say my feelings. I'll let you speak for yourself. But my feelings on Hirelahu this year is in last year's season, it was like you're kind of holding your breath when he's out there. This year, I've got nothing but faith that he's going to nail it if he has to. These were just fluke misses. It happens.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think his confidence is there. I don't think it's shot because of this game, and he will continue to have a great season. I just want to say that I'm pretty sure Trey Roberson had moon shoes on when he blocked that punt or blocked that field goal.
Either
that's the only explanation.
Either that or he's a monstar. You know what I mean? Like from the old Space Jam movie. Like, I don't know, man. I said in my piece for Three Down that he jumped 75 feet in the air, and that was only a slight exaggeration because I've never seen someone jump that high on a football field before.
Or he had a rocket up his ass.
Yeah, one of the two. One of the two. Speaking of having rockets up places, our Podski player of the week this week always feels like he's got a rocket. I mean, maybe not up his ass, but maybe he's got rocket shoes on because he's so fast. Mike, why don't you tell everyone who we bestow this honor upon this week?
Now, I could have went to another player as well because the numbers were kind of similar, but we went with Brandon Banks. 8 receptions for 105 yards. Yards after catch, 87. 13.1 yard average along a 30. And that beautiful catch and run for the touchdown. So this week's Podsy Player of the Week, I believe it's might be his second time this year, is Brandon Banks.
How do you feel about, from now on, referring to him as future 2019 MOP Brandon Banks? That's going to get under a lot of people's skin, but I feel like we need to really start the Banks for MOP drive, like the campaign, like a Heisman campaign. We need to start this because I think this is much as it's a wide open race for the Grey Cup, I think it's a wide open race for MOP. And as I'm standing here right now, Mike, I'm still firmly in the camp of Speedy B for MOP. So what do you say? Do you think we start the campaign now?
I think we should. I just can't think of anyone else in the East that would come close to competing with him.
The only one I can think of is Vernon Adams. If the Owls win 10 games, I could see Vernon Adams getting, especially if he plays as well as he's been playing. He's a quarterback. Mm-hmm. I could see him. But if Banks finishes like with the triple crown, catches, touchdowns, yards, and he's head and shoulders above everyone, I think that's the only way I see him not coming out of the East for MOP.
But is Reggie Bagleton better than him?
No. I don't care what anyone says. No.
Okay.
I saw the same stuff you did. No. Reggie Bagleton is not better than Brandon Banks. Reggie Bagleton has done it for, what, 12 games? Let's see what Reggie Bagleton does in 4 years. No. Brandon Banks is the best receiver in the CFL, and I will stand by that. And anyone who doesn't agree with me, come at me, bro.
Yes, I'm totally agreement with you. Brandon Banks, Reggie Bagleton's a fine receiver. But
He's awesome. Oh, he's not Brandon Banks. Sure.
No, he's not on the level of Brandon Banks yet. That's
not yet.
Sure.
Not yet. Brandon Banks, after year one as a receiver, it wasn't time to anoint him. I can't do the same for Reggie Bagleton either. Or any. There's still a lot of good receivers in the CFL. Brian Burnham's fantastic. You can't forget Darrell Walker. There's a lot of great receivers. But for me, for my money right now, if I'm giving a guy the ball, who do I want the ball in his hands the most? It's Brandon Banks.
Yeah, and you know, he catches almost everything that's thrown his way. And the thing that separates Brandon Banks from a guy like Reggie Bagleton is what he does after the catch. You can't touch him with his speed and his dynamic play after he catches the ball. So you got to tip your hat to Brandon Banks for that.
Brandon Banks, a.k.a. future MOP Brandon Banks. We're going to get that trending.
There you go.
Let's talk some Ticats news, Mike. They made a few roster moves over the week. We were off last week. The big one, of course, the one we're going to talk about, is the signing of Terrell Sutton. This is another running. This team's gone through running backs. We talked about it earlier, like 4 or 5 running backs. Had a tremendous career with the Alouettes, traded to BC last year, played a little bit for them. Went with the Argos? Yeah, he signed with the Argos, which was, I think we even talked about it on the show. They signed him, Mercer Timmis, Chris Rainey. They had James Wilder Jr. They had Brandt. We were all like, what, are they going to run like a full house wishbone offense back there? Like, why so many running backs? He was released by the Argos. I think it was after their home opener where the Ticats smoked him by 50. And then he kind of, you know, sat out there for a little bit. Now the Ticats bring him in, sign him to the practice roster. He didn't see any time in Calgary, but I mean, I think it's got to be sooner or later before Terrell Sutton sees the field. And I don't know about you. I'm sure you're going to agree with me because I think we both kind of secretly had a little bit of a football crush on Terrell Sutton, loving what he did with the Alouettes. I think this is a great signing. We don't know how long Cam Marshall's going to be out. We don't know how long Sean Thomas Erlington's going to be out. You get a bruiser like Sutton back there, especially as the weather turns cold, could make a big difference for this offense.
Yeah, I like the signing. I actually, you know, kind of forgot about Terrell Sutton, to be honest, until the Ticats signed him. I don't even remember him being released by the Argonauts. But yeah, I like that they brought him in. Obviously, he has had a great past in the CFL. He's been a very productive player. Let's just hope that he's not, too far past his prime. I think he can still do a lot of good things for the Ticats. And you can switch it up. He doesn't have to. He's not. He can't. He doesn't have to be an every down back. With guys like Coombs that we still have in the lineup, and Addison's been getting touches. They can still do that creative stuff with the handing the ball off to different players. But I think that just this gives them a steady running back in the backfield. A more veteran running back. So I think it's a good thing for this team.
No, and like I don't think they're going to go away from starting a Canadian at tailback. I still think it's going to be Coombs. I still think we're going to see a lot of Jackson Bennett. The thing is, though, is what it allows. If you get Sutton can return kicks too. I think that's something that people seem to forget. He did a lot of that in Montreal. Did some of that in BC even last year. So that's something that you can throw him out there and play on special teams. But he can be a bit of a change of bat. I mean, I know you're not going to use him, but I mean, he can do that. You know what I mean? So it's like, it's not something I want him to be doing full time, but it's something he can do. So, like, being able to play special teams helps him get on the roster, is what I kind of mean by that. But the big thing is you can load up you need 2 yards. You put in the big package. You take, that big. The big Serb, apparently, as they call him, Nikola Kalinic, Nico, put him out there so you can you bring him in. You can replace your Canadian with an American. You throw Sutton back there, second and two, and you just tell those hoggies up front, go slam into the guy in front of you, and Sutton will do the rest. So, I mean, it allows the offense to do a little bit more than they've been able to. Because even with, like, Sean Thomas Erlington can be a bit of a bruiser. Cam Marshall was a bit of a bruiser. Anthony Coombs, less so, obviously. But, I mean, you just look at what this offense will be able to do creatively. Like, we've seen what Tommy Gundel likes to do when he's got some guys. Throwing a Terrell Sutton into the mix, never a bad idea.
No, definitely not. He's kind of in between a bruiser and a fast running back, in my opinion. I think he's pretty good in the backfield blocking as well, since he's kind of a bulldog back there. So, we've gone through these running backs, bringing in guys like Cam Marshall and, Sean Thomas Erden goes down, and we're trying to get some, what am I? What word am I looking for here, Josh? Some,
Continuity.
there you go. Some week to week running back that's going to be there. So if that's going to be Terrell Sutton, then that's a good thing.
So TSN, now this is rumor at this point, but Dan Barnes of Post Media wrote that TSN and the CFL have agreed to a new television contract. It's a 6-year deal that will run through the 2025 season. It'll be worth approximately $50 million annually, which could grow based on incentives, and TSN retains everything they retained in the last one. All streaming rights, all sorts of every game, Grey Cup, playoffs, all that stuff will be exclusive to TSN. I'm not going to say this is a bad thing because I think TSN has been a great partner with the CFL since TSN became the official lone home of the CFL. What was it, like 07, 08, something like that? I feel like that started sort of the CFL's gradual run to being the much more stable league that we see today. But I just don't understand why the league would rush into this new television deal or to extend the television deal when the contract wasn't up until 2021. And there's all this talk about the fact that we're going to get a team in Halifax. In the piece that talked about this, it said it looks like the Atlantic Schooners are going to be a go and that they're going to start in Moncton in 2021. And that then they'll move into the stadium in Halifax a couple of years later. I mean, it really feels like we're going to get that 10th team. So I don't really understand why the CFL would lock themselves into this deal now, and especially for how long they did. Like, 2025 is a long time away. If there's a 10th team by 2021, and now you take a $50 million pie and are instead of splitting it 9 ways, you're splitting it 10 ways. I mean, each team gets a little less. It seems that, I don't know. It's not a bad thing. This just seems kind of weird to me.
Yeah, it seems a little rushed. And they keep doing this. Like, they extended the one deal, the 2021.
Yeah, it was extended with like 3 years left on the deal too. Yeah, it's weird that they do this, because I don't think any other sports league really does this.
No. Well, maybe, you know, who else is going to buy the rights? I mean, I don't think Sportsnet's going to be interested in the CFL. CBC doesn't really bid on sporting
You
on
want me? You
sports
want me? You
anymore,
want me
as
to
far as
throw
I
a? You
know.
want me to throw an outside the box one in there for you?
Sure.
DAZN, the streaming site.
Fair. Yeah, that's fair.
I believe, and someone can correct me if I'm wrong. I say that a lot, and I hope someone does correct me if I'm wrong. But there was, I believe, someone who works for DAZN now used to work for the CFL. I wish I could remember his name, but he was like the social media guy for the CFL, and now he does some work with DAZN. I'm not sure where. I think he was a social media guy. Again, if you're out there and you know exactly what I'm talking about and who I'm talking about, please correct me. I will be happy to get the correct information out there. So there could have been a partnership there, and I know that DAZN took, especially early on, took a lot of hits for like the quality of its product. But like, I've had it for 2 years now, I think. Maybe whenever they first came in, the first year was really kind of herky jerky, and ever since that, it's been pretty smooth. What about them coming in and being like, we'll be the they're the official streaming service of the National Football League in Canada. They have the rights to Premier League soccer in Canada. I don't know why they wouldn't maybe be, and that to me also would speak to the idea of looking the old look where the puck is going, not where it is sort of thing. Streaming stuff is the future. And at $20 a month, if you told me you're getting NFL, Premier League soccer, and the CFL now, that'd be a no-brainer for football fans.
Yeah, I think they'd have to throw a huge amount of money at the CFL for them to do that. I mean, people complain now that it's only on TSN and they can't watch, but could you imagine if it was on the DAZN? I mean, what are the numbers that how many subscribers does DAZN have?
I don't know, but here's
There'd be
kind of my
so
response.
many less Canadians watching the CFL.
Sure, but here's my response to that. Do people complain that you can't watch Stranger Things on NBC? That you have to, oh, I have to get Netflix to watch Stranger Things? Like, it's, we can't be still be beholden to the way people used to do things. You know what I mean? Like, I still have cable, mostly because I want TSN so I can watch the CFL. But I watch most, I don't know about you, but I watch most of my content on streaming service. If it's Amazon Prime, if it's Crave TV, if it's Netflix, WWE Network, like a lot of the stuff that I watch isn't on television anymore. You know what I mean? Like, and that's sort of the other thing. Like, maybe you do the deal with TSN, but you sell the streaming rights to DAZN. Maybe you don't do both, but then it gives you the option. It gives it, then you're kind of, you might be, maybe you only get, 30 million from TSN for the, on television, the terrestrial, I believe it's called, broadcast rights. Maybe you get another 25, 30 million from DAZN for the, and now you're making more money. But now, and you also have given people options. Like, I do know, especially around the world, there are a lot of people who don't like the fact that they can't stream CFL games legally. Maybe this is a way around it. Maybe you find, maybe you start, maybe you do this deal and maybe you don't do it as long. Maybe you do, I don't know, 2022, 2023, or you know what I mean? Maybe you don't even extend it at all at this point. And then you maybe test out, okay, well, DAZN buys the international streaming rights for the CFL. So you can't get in Canada right away, but you can get it if you live in, England, and they're trying to grow the game globally, are they not? What better way than to attach yourself to a fast-growing sports streaming service that's available around the world?
Yeah, if we were talking about, they could stream on DAZN in Canada and watch on TSN, I don't think TSN would go for that at all. But if we're
No, they
talking about
probably wouldn't, but
international streaming rights, then yeah, that would be. I mean, if they could get 50 million from TSN and then another, even 10 million from DAZN for international streaming rights, I mean, that would be incredible for the CFL.
it's one of those things where I feel like this was rushed almost, and that look how di okay, so when this initial TSN deal was signed, I want to say it was 2007 was when the CFL went to TSN exclusively. Think about where the sports broadcasting landscape was in 07 and where it
Would have been 08. Sorry,
was
might
it
have been
08?
08.
It was
I
08?
believe the last Grey Cup on CBC with 2007.
I think you're right. So 08. Think about where the world of sports broadcasting was from 2008 to 2015. Look at the difference in how people consume not just sports, but media in general, movies, television, what have you. What could be the changes that could come between 2019 and 2020? Like, we could be looking at a whole different sports broadcasting landscape. Like, this feels like they locked themselves in. Maybe not so much that they did it as like with so much time left on the current deal, but that they locked themselves in for so long. That's the thing that just kind of, by 2025, who knows what people will want? Like, no one's buying that TSN Direct. I think it's like $25 a month to mm-hmm. get TSN. Think about that. You're going to pay $25 a month to watch the CFL if you don't have cable, but you won't pay $20 a month to get DAZN to watch the CFL, where you also get all this other stuff. You know what I mean? Like, it just feels to me like maybe they took, you know, the old saying, like a bird in the hand is worth two in the bush. It feels like they kind of took that more literally. And I don't know. I get the sort of idea that, okay, well, this is guaranteed money and we now have stability through 2025 and all other sorts of stuff. I just wish they would have come up with something a little different. Maybe I don't ever think there'll be a day where another sports broadcaster will bid on this. I know some people want that, and that would be great if you could split the package up and have it on two stations and then have, you know, Sportsnet and TSN both sort of promoting the league, and I think that would be better for the league, but I don't ever really see that happening. But the streaming thing's the one that really kind of – we would not have been talking about streaming rights back when TSN first became the official partner of the CFL, and now it's one of the highest growth ways to watch sports, period. So yep. I don't know. It feels to me like maybe they kind of locked themselves into something that might be outdated by the time this thing reaches its conclusion.
Yeah, and the cable TV is like, you know, it's a lot of people are cutting the cord. It's mm-hmm. kind of dying. The only thing that is really keeping it alive is live sports, right?
Yep.
I mean, the commercials, the advertisers, they pay top dollar for, you know, NFL or whatever, but yeah, I just wonder if also maybe they kind of got lowballed. I mean, $50 million seems like a lot, but it's not that much from what they were getting before. Yes, it's like $10 million more, but if TSN really wanted this league to grow, I think they'd throw a couple more bucks at them. I don't know. It would just seem like it would be better for both if they could throw more money at them. That way, they could raise the salary cap and so on and so forth. I like TSN as a broadcast for the CFL, but yeah, I would like to see maybe $60 million. That would have been nice.
If there's one criticism I can have of TSN and all this, it's their presentation of the CFL has kind of been a little stale recently. Like, it mm-hmm. feels like there's been no like real substantial changes. I'm not saying like, oh, you need new panel members but sometimes like a fresh coat of paint looks good. Like the ticker at the bottom with the scores looked the same for a number of years. The look of the sort of the halftime show and the panel has looked, and I mean like the physical look of the set, not the people who are on it, has kind of looked the same for yep. a number of years. You watch, and again, I hate to compare it to other sports leagues, but say you watch something like the NFL, and it seems like every year, whether it's ESPN or CBS or Fox, they're making changes to not make everything look so the same. Like, right. I mean, ESPN, this just the first week of Monday night, they got complaints on Twitter about the way that their first down marker looked, and they switched it by halftime. Like, it feels like maybe, and I know that in the piece that I pulled all this information from, there was talk about like incentives based on ratings and stuff like that. I hope there's some incentives for TSN to maybe change up the presentation a little bit. And I'm not saying that people need to lose their jobs or anything like that, but like maybe some new commentators, maybe some fresh blood. Like, we've seen David Sanchez, we've seen Henry Burris, like we've seen some new guys join the panel. And I feel like that's added some, like it's made it different enough where it's added a little bit of vibrancy to it. It would be really nice if we could see that maybe reflected in the color commentary and the play-by-play. Like, just sometimes a new voice just makes, even if it makes a stale presentation, it makes it feel new. You know what I mean? Like, sometimes you just need that. That's something new to make, to kind of get people more interested. And I get it. There's some comfort. Like, look, we're both old school wrestling fans, and hearing Jim Ross call Monday Night Raw every week in our teenage years was like, there was comfort in, oh, it's good old JR. And I understand that, but I don't know. I feel like TSN needs to be some incentive for TSN to sort of maybe change the way that they present the CFL. It feels just right now, for the last few years, it just felt a little stale.
Yeah, it feels like they're resting on their laurels. They're
a
just
little bit.
Like,
and why wouldn't they, when they go, well, we got 2 years left in this deal. Here's $50 million to sign for another six. Will you do it? And they go, yep.
Mm. Yeah, and there's no, you know, you talk about the NFL, you know, CBS, Fox. There's different company, different stations, you know, competing with each other to be the best mm-hmm. broadcast. TSN doesn't have that, you know, so they don't have any incentive
it's
to get
Madden
better.
It's the problem.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. It's like, we're it. This is CFL's on our channels. Nobody has it, so we're just gonna do the same old thing we have been doing for the last 15 years.
It's the problem that Vince McMahon and WWE has had since WCW and ECW went down. No competition means yep. there's no reason to change. They got nowhere else to go.
Exactly.
So maybe if they would have added DAZN to the lineup and maybe talked DAZN into doing like a weekly half hour, like they show regular shows on DAZN, like regular sports themed shows, and like Pat McAfee, who, if anyone doesn't know, is the ex punter of the Indianapolis Colts and is absolutely freaking hilarious. He's got a show on DAZN like once a week. Like, maybe they could have partnered up with DAZN and said, okay, we want to do a once a week, maybe half an hour show, or maybe twice a week, half an hour show, where we talk about the CFL. Like, I feel like for a league in the CFL that always feels like they're ahead of the curve on a lot of things, this one feels like they're stuck in their old ways.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I guess you can't really blame it on the league. Well, I guess you can, for taking the money and just, you know, being happy with it. But TSN, yeah, needs to step up their game a bit. They had that new announcer or commentator early on in the season. I think he did
game. Oh, yeah. I think he did an Eskimos game.
Yeah, and I think he did a Montreal-Ottawa game as well.
I think you're right. It's just something new. It sounds new.
Yeah, it's a fresh, you know, it's not Rod Black.
Not Chris Cuthbert. No, and all due respect to those, not Gord Miller. Those guys are great. Like, even Rod Black, for all the hate he gets, is and I've said this a number of times, when the big moment comes, Rod Black's voice is tremendous. They're good at their job, but sometimes you want to hear someone new.
Yeah, why can't we have, you know, three, you know, the thing about Rod Black is we just hear him so much, you mm-hmm. know? It's like, can we just change it up a bit? If we had one Rod Black for one game a week or something, I don't think people would hate him as much as they do.
I agree. I think that's the problem, too, is we get these guys doing so many games every week, sometimes at most it's usually two that these guys will do a week. They use the same cliches. I'm sure people who listen to us every week hear us say the same things over and over again, like our verbal tics and stuff like that. That's human nature. We kind of fall back on the things we know. Like, I'm sure there's certain words that I use more often than other words, because it's just one of those things that it's the word that pops to the forefront of your mind. It's no different with these guys, and these guys are doing it on a national stage. And don't think that doing play-by-play for sports isn't hard. It's very, very difficult, and I appreciate the job these guys do. But sometimes you just want something fresh, and I think that that's the big thing. I'd be interested to see over the course of this deal if the CFL and TSN ever sort of freshens up a little bit, because I think that that's – I don't think that that's had anything to do with, like, a decrease in ratings or a decrease in interest, because I think that those aren't things that people really care about. But I am very curious to see if maybe TSN will have some incentives in this to maybe try some new stuff and do some new things. Because even the stuff that they do that's new, like the live mic stuff, that's really just, you know, gussying up. So they've mic'd up players forever. You just didn't really hear it during the broadcast. So that's kind of shifting an invention instead of reinventing something or doing something different with it. I don't know. I'm happy that we know the CFL will, I mean, I'm happy we know the CFL is going to exist until 2025 because they're going to, you know what I mean? So there's no concerns about the league folding anytime soon. Not that I ever thought that was a concern anyway, but I don't know. I'm hoping that throughout the life of this deal, maybe we see some inventions and some innovation from TSN, and maybe we'll get some new stuff, some new voices, some just a new look in general.
Yeah, it would be nice. The one thing that is new this year that I like was the game intros, not on Friday Night Football, but any other night, not on Thursday night, but on Saturday when they have the, you know, the play, the team themes. And I just think it's a very cool intro.
Yeah, like you have the bomber flying over the stadium, yeah. And you have the tiger. I did think that was kind of neat.
I like that very much. So that was one thing that I thought they improved on a little bit this year. It's a very small thing, but, you know, I thought it was pretty cool.
Hopefully it's a start. Speaking of starts, the Ticats started on the road, their three-game road trip that we, all those weeks ago, all those months ago now, when we looked at the schedule for the first time and said, ooh, this is going to be a difficult stretch of games. We're now at that stretch. We're going to head into the second week of this three-game road trip. And it's in your neck of the woods, Mike. It's in Edmonton. You'll be at the game, I hope, on Friday night, yes?
Yeah, absolutely.
Awesome. Months ago. Awesome, awesome, awesome. So the Ticats obviously are in Edmonton to take on the Eskimos. No Trevor Harris, it looks like, for Edmonton in this one. He sustained an injury in their last game before their bye week. I guess it was the Labor Day rematch. He got hurt in that, and looks like he could miss some time. So it looks like it's going to be Logan Kilgore under center for Edmonton. The Ticats, Mike and I discussed this before, we figured it out, have won three of the last four games they played in Edmonton. So this has been a bit of a I won't say home field for them, but they've played fairly well in Edmonton. This feels like a game the Ticats should win. They're 9-3. Edmonton is 6-6. I mean, the knock on Edmonton all year has been they haven't beaten anyone, and I know we've heard that about pretty much every team in the CFL this year. It seems that's the go-to for any time you think your team's the best in the league. Well, who have they beaten? I don't know, man. I look at this game and I can't tell you that I can see a way in which the Ticats don't win this one.
Yeah, I'd have to agree. The only thing that I could see this game going south for the Tiger Cats is, you know, there's a mass amount of interceptions or fumbles or mistakes. But I just don't think that's going to happen in this game. You know, Hamilton's just the better team, and they should win this game. Logan Kilgore, who I thought did some good things when he came in to replace Trevor Harris. I think that there is some potential there, or could be. I just don't see him lifting the Eskimos over the Tiger Cats. I think that Tiger Cats are going to bounce back in this game with the defensive line. They're going to get some pressure on Kilgore. Even though Edmonton's offensive line is very, very good, I think that they're gonna disrupt Logan Kilgore a little bit. They got C.J. Gable back there, who we all know is a very good running back, but the Tiger Cats' run defense has been pretty darn good over the last 3 or 4 weeks, and I think they're going to shut him down as well. Yeah, I agree with you. I just don't see them losing this game.
Do you know what that means then, if the Ticats win this game?
My legs will be smooth.
I like that that's where you go and not playoffs, baby, because that's what it also means.
Yes. Well, the more important thing is my legs.
Come on. Absolutely. So, yeah, if the Ticats win this game, they will officially clinch a spot in the playoffs. And it will also mean that they hit the 10-win mark, which means Mike will have to shave his legs.
How's this going to go down? Are we going to all? Is there going to be like an audience for this?
I don't know. We'll figure that out. We'll figure that out when we get there. But let's get to 10 wins first before we start planning any sort of public shaming of you and your chicken legs, which will be hairless.
Electric razor? Or are we going? You know.
Oh, I think we got to go. I think we got to go shaving cream, buddy.
Yeah, I think so too.
Maybe we'll trim it down a little bit. I don't know how hairy your legs are, but maybe we'll trim it down a little bit, and then we'll use the blade.
All right, that's fair. Unless they go on a massive losing streak.
Yeah, well, we don't want that.
No, not at all. No.
All right, so, I mean, there's not really much else to talk about the game. We both think the Ticats are going to win, and so we're hoping we'll be sitting here next week talking about a W and a 10-win football team, so that's all good. So that was Podski Wee Wee for this week. I'm Josh Smith.
Now, Mike Graham, eat 'em raw.
Eat 'em raw.
Thanks for listening. Find more great shows like this at CF Pod Network on Twitter.